Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Read with Michelle Martin on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Today, a deep dive into how a traditional bank took on the challenge of pursuing digital transformation. It's a book that's really an in-depth case study of the real experience, the frameworks, the deep thinking involved in how UOB set out to create a digital bank that would stretch across ASEAN and meet the expectations of customers of the future. The book is titled Driving Digital Transformation. The man at the center of it is Dr. Dennis Koo. He is responsible for the creation of Tomorrow. Imagine that. It launched first in Thailand in 2019, Indonesia in 2020, and UOB recently announced a $500 million investment into unifying its digital capabilities on the Tomorrow platform, expanded across ASEAN, the aim to double its digital customers by 2026. So what's the thinking behind the design for this undertaking? Let's find out. Dennis Koo is managing partner of All Digital Future and the author of today's read, Driving Digital Transformation, Lessons from Building the First ASEAN Digital Bank. Dennis, welcome to the program.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
Good to speak with you. Now tell us, how is this book an insider view of digital banking?
Well, there are very few books that go into detail on how you actually create a digital bank, for that matter, how you actually go about transformation. And I think the biggest revelation is that digital transformation is really a misnomer because it's really business transformation and it involves people, process, and of course technology, but technology is one piece of many pieces that you need to get right.
Yeah, so technology is part of the solution, but it starts with people. In fact, I was quite struck to read in this book that you say ethnographic qualitative research. Was that the first place that you started, one of the first places or a very important key?
Well, the interesting thing is because, you know, we were Singaporeans, the initial group was mostly Singaporeans first, building a digital bank, firstly in Thailand and then in Indonesia. So, you know, ASEAN isn't one country. It's many different languages. So you can't speak the language and therefore you have to immerse yourself and really understand the customer first. And now as I help companies transform, what I find is that most companies don't know their customers' problems better than the customer. And I think that's the starting point for most companies, is really understanding the customer. And ethnographic research really helps you do that because it's not about asking them a hypothetical question. It's about observing them in terms of how they use their products and services and what kind of problems they have.
I'm a sociologist by training, so I so get what you're saying.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because, you know, so much of modern work, you know, in transformation is about people and therefore it's about the psychology of both customers and employees.
Fabulous. And did you see that, you know, customer expectations are global when it comes to what people want from digital banking, or were there subtle differences?
Well, interestingly, it's a combination of both, whereas banking is a local business. But yet, you know, if you look at it, there's a lot of things in common, right? It, probably 70 to 80% of the time, the most important functions of anyone using either digital banking or digital bank is really to transfer funds, to pay bills, and of course, all the other things associated with it, like, you know, being able to manage your limits, look at statements, look at transactions, etc. But at the same time, there's a lot of stuff that's local. So, for example, all the payment networks are local. So you've got to interface to the local payment networks. And also there are certain idiosyncrasies in each country. Like most countries, you know, you do from which account to which account. But some countries, they might have it the other way around, to which account and from which account. So these are things that you can't easily change because people are used to it. So understanding that little, you know, idiosyncrasies and the norms in each of the countries, those are quite important to combine with what would be the general things that, you know, people do globally around the world with their banking apps.
Who is this book for, Dennis?
Well, I really wrote the book for two audiences. One was the people behind the scenes. There were many, many people involved in creating Tomorrow by UOB. And during the time where I left, there was COVID, so, you know, we couldn't get together. So this was really my way of thanking everyone involved in the program. And secondly, I wrote it really for executives, senior C-suite executives around the world, Because I think today there's a very big gap in knowledge between the C-suite and the working level. And I think the majority of incumbent companies, senior executives in incumbent companies, find it very difficult to really transform because they don't have the basics and they don't have the right methodology. So I wrote this book for anyone who wants to improve their probability of success of their transformation in a large incumbent. And incumbent companies tend to be fairly complicated.
So as you say, you wrote this for the many hands involved in making UOB's tomorrow. And the book charts how you and your team went against the established paradigms of the time to build ASEAN's first digital bank. Can you share with us some examples of how you chose to look away from what was conventional wisdom at the time when building tomorrow?
Well, the first interesting example would be how most people focus on product. And in banking, when you focus on product, usually what you really mean is focus on the benefits, the pricing. And one of the things that I was really adamant about was not using price or benefits as the first part of call. And so, it didn't make sense because after all, if you spend so much effort, time, money and resource on making the experience good, then, you shouldn't need to offer the same kind of very competitive offer for someone whose experience isn't as good. So that was one of the things that we did differently. The research, interviewing thousands of customers was something very different. And also the understanding that actually we are going to compete on three different levels of competitive advantage. The first was really your basic transactional banking experience in the way you onboard, the way customers transact, how you grant credit, and all the things that you do in terms of, the basics of using a banking app had to be very, very good. And therefore, we wouldn't want to launch unless our net promoter score was very, very high. And that was one of the key objectives, when we set out to design, build, and launch it. And then the second was really providing very, very good service, something which banks still find it difficult. If you go to any call center, the confusing, press one for this, press two for that, can go on and on forever. Mm. And what the interesting thing was that using chat, because we designed it and quite a bold move to put everything into a chatbot first, knowing that the chatbot would take time to get better. So we, in the early days, escalated very quickly to agents. But now I think, the understandability of the chatbot has gotten better and better and better. In fact, I believe one of the statistics that UOB put out was that it has an understanding rate north of 85% now. So as that got better, then the chatbot could really do a lot more high-quality service, obviously at a very affordable cost. And not only that, but the interesting thing we found was that when you do chat, you can actually look. We provided the agents a way to view what was the last service issue that the customers had. And so when you compare that to using voice, in voice it's very difficult actually to pull out what the last call was. Usually the agent does a sum up and, all the accuracy is in that sum up. So this was one of the breakthrough elements in terms of providing great service when you need to. And finally, using data to prevent problems from even happening in the first place. And I'll give an example. This is not really a tomorrow example, but an example I think most people can relate to. You might have many accounts in the bank, one of which is connected to your salary account. The others may not be, but you still have debit sitting those accounts. And sometimes when you forget to fund those accounts, the debits will fail. And banks today generally, they will levy some kind of charge when the debit fails, right? And then you might call up and you might spend a lot of time trying to convince them that, you shouldn't be billed that for, it was maybe an innocent mistake. But actually, all that data exists. And therefore, banks could actually detect that you forgotten to fund and they know the pattern of the next debit that could be coming in. And they could easily alert you to say that, click here to transfer enough funds over from the account where your salary is credited so that the debit doesn't fail. So it's really three levels of differentiation. The first is very, very good basic banking that is really going to be much better in terms of net promoter score. In fact, I recommend at least double. Very, very good service and finally using data to prevent problems from even happening in the first place.
Fascinating. When we look at the future of banking, what do you see? You say in the book, it's clear banking isn't about products anymore. What do you see when you think of the future of banking?
Well, I see two different areas where existing incumbents need to be concerned about. One is where you have a large group of underbanked or unbanked. And in ASEAN, this would be in the countries of Indonesia, Vietnam, the Philippines. And in these countries, they are very open to what I describe in my book as a bottom-of-the-pyramid attack. And this is disruptive innovation theory made famous by the late Clayton Christensen. And what it describes is that in many industries, time and time again, someone entering from the bottom of the pyramid with a good technological core over a period of 15 years will make its way up. And therefore, that would sandwich the current incumbents who are serving the mass market or the mass affluent. So those banks in these kind of demographics and these kind of large geographies need to be very concerned about how they defend against the bottom of the pyramid attack that would then sandwich them as these competitors move upwards. Now, in much smaller markets like Singapore, there isn't really also a large unbanked population. So in this case, then you're really thinking, you know, how do you defend from a potential attacker in a banked base? And I think the similar play would be if somebody did tomorrow by UOB kind of attack in Singapore, then how would an incumbent bank defend against such an attack? And that attack would come mostly from having very high experience scores over a period of time. Of course, you need fairly deep pockets, you know, to see through this, because one of the things in something like banking is that, and in my book, I contrast this with the invention of the bicycle, right? When we move from walking to the bicycle, there is a 5x improvement in distance over time afforded by the technological advancement that is brought about by the bicycle. But in many industries today, you don't have that kind of opportunity. You know, many incumbent companies are really dealing with experience. And what that means is that just like in digital bank, you take 20, 30 pet peeves, things that customers might not even hate enough to really call out and complain. And you string those together and you make a beautiful experience with a very, very high net promoter score. And that's difficult to do because, you know, it requires a lot of attention to detail. So I see two really different types of situation. One in the large geographies where you need to really manage someone coming in, like, for example, Nubank in Brazil, Kakao Bank in Korea, coming in and then attacking you from the bottom. And in the rest of the geographies, it's really about worrying about experience and how do you prevent an experience attack where a competitor is really able to take 30 things and string them together so beautifully that customers think that, well, banking should always have been done this way.
Dennis Koo is my guest today. He's managing partner All Digital Future and the author of the book we're reading, Driving Digital Transformation, Lessons from Building the First ASEAN Digital Bank. When approaching digital transformation, because you say this book is also for any leader involved in that initiative outside of banking, what do companies have to keep in mind about customer interaction?
Well, interestingly, as you asked, Michelle, there are the main reasons why companies fail. I think the first one is putting the solution before the problem. So they don't really understand what the customer problem is they're trying to fix, but they're fixated on implementing AI or they're fixated on implementing robotics. And that's a sure way down the path to failure, because then the permutations are too big because you're not clear exactly what you're trying to solve. So therefore, starting with the problem, being very customer-centric, understanding the problem better than your customer is really what we recommend to be the starting point. But some of the other failures are, you know, how you deal with the complexity, because it's actually very, very complicated. The number of things you need to do and, you know, the process you need to look at, they're all fairly complex. And also, how do you go from an idea to innovation? Sometimes not obvious. You need to pass through three hurdles, which is all about desirability, viability, and feasibility. So as I research this, you know, it is no wonder that many companies don't meet their stated objective. In fact, most research says that only between 5 to 30% of all companies actually achieve their stated business transformation objectives.
You spent 20 years running retail banking franchises across Asia for both UOB and Standard Chartered. Did any of that work its way into thinking of the design principles when you help create tomorrow for UOB?
Well, that's a great question, Michelle, because you know what I've realized is that if you take anything in any company and you break into three levels, then the top level is really why you want to do something and the high level what you're going to do. And then the next level down, what I call level two, is really the lower level items in terms of what. And finally, the third level down is how, you know, how something works and what's going to happen and what you need to change. And the interesting thing about transformation today, as I've learned in those 20 years where I actually operated almost every single product within the consumer space and therefore got a lot of hands-on experience, was that actually today transformation in most incumbent companies that are in the experience space, it happens at that third level, the how. And I think one of the issues is then for senior people, they need to reconnect with the how things are done. They need to ask the right questions. They need to be curious about what's happening in the organization and kind of relearn things again. And their job is really to ask the right questions, make sure that they understand the tweaks that need to be made in that level three house, and then making sure that the how, the why, and the what are all connected in the right way so that the transformation has a better chance of being successful.
Fascinating. Thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Dennis Koo is the author of the book we're reading today, Driving Digital Transformation, Lessons from Building the First ASEAN Digital Bank.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.